Hi, I'm Allie Gertz.
And I'm Julia Prescott.
And everything's coming up podcast.
This episode is sponsored by the 1994 Tony Awards.
Boo, change the channel.
Rage starting. Want to kill. So today we are talking about the Treehouse of Horror, episode 5.
Yeah, and the title card, I think it says that it's the Simpsons Halloween Special 5.
Yeah.
So whichever one you prefer, that is what we're talking about today with our special guest, Nick Weiger.
Hi.
Yay. Hi. Thanks for joining us.
We're just trying to get the energy up.
Yeah. Why not?
And we're done. Bye. Guys,
this was so much fun.
Yeah, thanks.
You were great.
Mm-hmm.
Why did you pick this episode?
It's a good question. So the way this is structured is you came to me and asked me if there was an episode I wanted to do. I assume that's what you do with your guests in general. And I just like was hemming and hawing a lot of like there's just so many that came to mind, you know. The PTA disbands is one I was thinking of, but I wanted to do a Treehouse of Horror because these are just such events and they're such a big part of like every season in The Simpsons. It's something interesting that changes it up a little bit. And I feel like this is the best Treehouse of Horror. I mean, I'm not alone in that. I think the kind of the critical consensus is that Treehouse of Horror 5 is the best one. So I guess that was it. I think also too, it's just like, you know, as a kid, I was like really into like science fiction and horror. And so it was like my favorite TV show tackling that in a comedic way was just always something that like I gravitated to each season.
How old are you when this episode came out?
I would have been, what year was it? 94. So I would have been just turned 14.
That seems like a really good age for this episode. I remember I think Julie and I were probably I was 3 years old, so I don't know if I was probably watching this as it was on, but I know that this episode terrified me, and even rewatching it this morning really scared me. There's some very, very disturbing imagery.
What part of it terrified you?
I was really scared of the intro, which is funny,
right.
And it's actually so, like, just iconic, just seeing the red like curtains behind Marge and the mm-hmm. spotlight, you know that it's going to be something big. Like Nick said, like it is an event. Like
right.
Every year you get to watch this one super cool episode that you know is going to be at least different, even if it's not scary, but there's going to be something that they get to bend the rules, which
oh, yeah,
I think
absolutely.
Is the most exciting
kill
part
characters,
about. Yeah.
You know.
And you have Marge come out and, you know, Marge kind of is speaking on behalf of the scaredy cats like myself,
yeah.
And is kind of warning you, just like, this is going to be scary. In fact, we're not even allowed to show it. We're going to recommend that you watch this movie, like, what was it, 200 Miles to Oregon?
Yes, something like that.
But,
I can't remember.
But she warns you, and then suddenly it turns off, and then Bart has the do not, like, adjust your TV screens. It's not broken. And then
right.
It immediately gets funny again because Homer goes in. But then you start seeing all these heads getting, like, chopped off.
Right.
And then you see, like, Mo being hung, which we already know is something he would do. So it's, like, steeped in this level of
yeah,
realism.
Yeah, you thought about it for an extra second.
That I was not prepared for. But I guess what scares me the most in this episode, in addition to just the very, very real, these are the dreams kids have.
Mm-hmm.
The illustration was just really good and creepy. Like,
yeah.
It had, like, a very Robotine effect to it. Like,
right.
Very, like, The Thing kind of stuff with the skin coming outside. And just
yeah.
All of the stuff was really gruesome. And I loved it.
Yeah, I was going to say in The Shining, which is the playoff The Shining, of
mm-hmm.
course.
Do you want to get sued?
Oh, it's so good. Homer is drawn so funny when he freaks out. Just like he goes through like 20 different emotions and it's just done
yeah.
Masterfully.
I think you're talking about the part, and this is after the line, which is maybe the best line of the episode, but it's no beer and no TV make Homer something something.
Go crazy.
Go crazy. Don't mind if I do. And then, but yeah, that's a great line. It's a great moment. But then you're right. He has this moment of like his face and his, he does all these like crazy like flips and with his hands and his mouth is moving. And then
yeah.
At the same time, Dan Gaslinda's voice is like fluctuating wildly. It's just like such like this crazy both physical and verbal thing that's just really awesome looking. Yeah, I think you guys hit on something of just like that's I think that's part of what's cool about these Treehouse of Horrors is they changed the visual character of the show. And as the show progressed, they started to, you know, do that more and have little tangents where they changed the animation style, and certainly the couch gags when those got extended is a place they played around with that. But the Treehouse of Horrors is always just something that just kind of had like kind of a different look to it, and then also just some really like really gruesome violence that they could get away with.
Yeah. You know? Absolutely. What part of this episode was your favorite segment?
Oh, of the three segments? That's a good question. I would say probably the middle one, which is Time and Punishment.
Oh, yeah. That one's so good.
So this is where Homer gets attempts to fix the toaster and instead sends himself back in time. And this was one where, you know, I think all three of these are references. I looked it up. I think the third one is a reference to something called Nightmare Cafe, which I don't know what it is.
No way.
But the first one is a Shining reference. And then the middle one, this is a reference. This is the one reference I knew going in, which was this Ray Bradbury short story, A Sound of Thunder, which is based on that premise of, I think they have hunting expeditions that send you back in time. And then, but you have to be very careful not to mess with anything because you can affect the future. And it's just about that. And I just thought that was a really cool concept. It was like a short story. I heard read aloud from a counselor at summer camp.
Awesome.
When I was like
cool
in seventh
summer
grade.
Camp.
Yeah. And so knowing that going in, and then I'm just like, oh, this is a really cool story that I know the source material of. And then it's just like a super funny comedic take on it. Like once they get into it, they're just so efficient with playing around with that premise.
Absolutely. Efficiency is really the operative word in this because they just sort of get to have those like jokes in a flash and then zip back and forth. And
it's so hard too, because it's like they've got basically like 7 minutes an act, and then they've got to within that they've got to tell an entire like structured story, and it's just like they have to be so
right.
And like watching it with like kind of like a writerly brain, you see things like in the Time and Punishment episode. They take Homer. They take the whole Simpson house into the Reen Education Center.
Yeah,
and it's like, oh, that looks really cool. But also, from an efficiency standpoint, the house is right there. So Homer, when he breaks away from the Reen Education Center, he can just go right to the toaster and transport back in time and get right back to it. I mean, that's all the justification they need. So, they're kind of impressive writerly achievements as well.
Yeah. Are there favorite lines from the toaster episode that you remember?
Hmm.
The one that I probably use the most, and I don't know how I make it come up the most.
I think I know what you're talking about.
Can I hear what you think it is?
Oh, shut up, you.
Oh, yeah, quiet you.
Oh, quiet you. Yeah. Sorry, shut up would have been too aggressive. Quiet you.
Quiet
I laughed every time I heard quiet you when I rewatched this. It was just so good.
Quiet you is definitely the one that would make sense to use. The one that I somehow use.
Oh, really?
I wish I hadn't squished that
Oh,
fish.
That's pretty good, too.
That one's really good. Is that quiet you? Is that a because I know that Mr. Peabody and Sherman is a thing, but do they say that on the show or is that a thing they invented?
No, I think
they're just making fun
invented.
Of it.
Yeah,
which makes it even better.
Because I mean, Mr. Peabody and Sherman, like I don't know, it's an ill matched pair.
Yeah.
And Mr. Peabody doesn't really need Sherman. He just sort of asks stupid questions. So I think that was their like opinion of that structure being voiced through quiet you.
I have as we were talking, I just thought of I just remember my favorite line, or kind of the best joke in this segment, which is Homer keeps going back in time, and each time, you know, he comes back and the present is a little different, and he goes back and he goes crazy and he just decides he's gonna stomp everything, and there's just like a really funny animated segment where he's like beating the crap out of a giant mosquito with a club and like
stepping on a lizard.
Yeah, stepping on a lizard. And then and then he comes back, and then now everything, like he comes back to the Simpsons house and it's this like gorgeous mansion, and Bart and Lisa are Bart is super well behaved, Lisa's wearing a tiara. And
they mentioned got the jewels in her mouth.
Yeah. They mentioned they're going to Patty and Selma's funeral, right? Like there's just all these
in
things.
In a Lexus.
Yeah, in a new Lexus. Yeah, luxury sedan. And then Homer asks for a donut, and Marge is like, "Donut? What's a donut?" And Homer screams and rushes downstairs and grabs a toaster and teleports back in time. And after he exits, Marge goes, "It's raining again." And you see outside, donuts are just falling from the sky.
Oh, the irony.
Yeah. It's really good.
It's painful. But and of course, the very fun twist that we all love is we finally think that he's made it back to his normal situations, but then they have like those crazy lizard tongues. It's like, eh, good enough.
Yeah, right, yeah, yeah.
Right. I love
it's
that.
A fun button.
Yeah, yeah. I love his out to that scene too, when everything is perfect, is that, you know, there are no donuts, and so that's what causes him to freak out. I just think that's so funny.
I also think Marge is so funny when Homer's freaking out and it's just like, what color is the sky? What are donuts? What day is it? And yeah, she says, the sky is blue. Donuts are plentiful. Friday is family night on ABC.
Yeah, I know. I love it when they reference like the TGIF that was happening at the time. I forget which episode this is, but it's like, you know, when Bart describes like, in Tuesday night, CBS is craptacular or something. I know I totally butchered that, but whatever.
That was one thing I think they did really well in this era, in this episode, is like, there's a bunch of references, including some I still don't get. I still don't know what I'm the first non-Brazilian person to travel back in time.
I don't get that either. And then he says it's a second.
Right. Yeah. And then, but there's also things like, you know, there's like a Terminator 2 reference in this segment. There's there's a Jurassic Park reference. We already talked about the Mr. Peabody and Sherman, but like none of this stuff feels too crowbarred in, and also like none of it kind of relies on your knowledge of the source material. You know, you can still kind of enjoy it on its own.
The Simpsons guide actually answers your question. Homer's reference to himself as the first non-Brazilian person to travel backwards through time alludes to the hallucinogen-inspired author Carlos Castaneda.
Wow.
Of course it does.
Yeah. God, they're stinking Harvard.
But, I mean, does that make that joke any funnier? It would have if we got that already, but it's exactly what The Simpsons does so well, is we know it's a joke, so we laugh.
Yeah.
We don't really need to know. It's just so funny.
We understand the rhythm and the cadence of a joke.
And we like, yeah, exactly. And we like that someone is a nerd. Like, and it's always fun that someone knows something well enough.
And we also
that's
trust
funny.
Them.
Yeah, they're not going to mislead us. And yeah, let's actually get the rating. What comes next? Would it be the shitting, or would it be the nightmare cafeteria episode?
They're neck and neck for me. I mean, I think the consensus is that people think of nightmare cafeteria as the weak link, but I think I like that one a lot. And part of it may be also too, like, I know The Shining better than I know The Shining. Like it's you know, I think maybe if you're a Shining super fan going into seeing The Shining, you appreciate that one a little bit more.
Right.
Then again, The Shining has some really good jokes. I don't know. I mean, that'd be hard to call. If you made me choose, I would probably say Nightmare Cafeteria.
Yeah.
There's just like so many fun moments in that one.
The probably the most jokes, like it's
yeah
just,
yeah, yeah.
It's, you might say there's a little ooter in all of us.
That's really great because he does that twice. Like there's the earlier part with Biz Kerboppel, and he's like, remember when I said I'd make something? Remember I told Jimbo Jones I'd make something out of him someday? And then Mrs. Kerboppel is like, are you saying we ate Jimbo? You took Jimbo, prepared him into a meal. We're eating him and digesting him now.
Doesn't he just point to his nose?
He points to his nose. And then the Uter joke, which you just referenced, is like the same sort of thing. It just like goes a step too far in terms of a literalism. But that joke's really great.
I love the animation of Skinner when he's kind of bopping, like so excited, wearing his lederhosen in between very disturbed Bart
and
Lisa.
There's a lot of great animation in this episode, and I love it when Mrs. Kerboppel gets fat and the way they animate her, and that's
super
so
fun.
Great. And I feel like these episodes, the Treehouse of Horrors, they really did something quite brilliant with setting these up for themselves as sort of like a playground for just joke. Because a normal Simpsons episode, of course, is has a lot of jokes, but not at this frequency, I don't think.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just constant. And also, the caliber of joke in Nightmare Cafeteria, it is all on the nose stuff.
Sure.
But I love it. I love that they just embrace it. My favorite joke from The Shining is when Willie discovers that Bart has a shinning, and he's like, whenever you need me, you know, just use the shinning to page me or whatever. And he's like, except for between 4 and 6, that's Willie's time. I just thought that was so funny.
I never got that joke until this viewing.
Yeah. That's one for adults.
That's Willie's time.
That's one for dad. That was like, and also too, like, cause The Shining has this thing of Bart, you know, Bart can read, Bart has The Shining, he can read or communicate telepathically with Willie. They do a thing with Bart, like in telepathy a few times, like not just in the Halloween episodes, like the Trab Poo Kip joke in the Brother from the Same Planet episode where Bart is trying to mentally tell Homer to pick him up from soccer practice.
Oh, yeah.
And then he's like, he's saying like, pick up Bart. And then you see Milhouse writing it backwards. So that's like the same thing. And then also in the episode where, I think it's, what's the episode where Seymour, where Bart skips school and then witnesses the waiter getting
beaten
up.
That's the Chowder one.
The Chowder episode, yeah. But that's one where, like,
right.
Yeah, where Homer's in the jury box and he goes, I know you can read my thoughts, boy. Meow, 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 meow. So it's like, for some reason, they just decided to run with Bart having some telepathic ability or implying it. Outside the context of this one.
It seems appropriate.
It does make sense.
Very cunning.
You know, the joke I like in The Shining is, we already talked about the no TV and no beer, make Homer something something, but I also like the run where he's breaking down the door, and the first one he breaks down, and it's the Shining direct analog where he's like, here's Johnny, and there's no one there, and then he breaks down the second door, and he's like, David Letterman.
Hi, David, I'm Grandpa.
And then the third one, he does like the entire 60 Minutes intro. It's like, I'm Mike Wallace, I'm Morley Safer, and I'm Ed Bradley, all this, and Andy Rooney tonight, 60 Minutes. It's like so ridiculous.
Yeah, holding the stopwatch.
Yeah, he's holding the stopwatch. Yeah, it's such a great detail.
I think Marge is really good in all these episodes, just staying as Marge as possible, but a little elevated, because right when Homer realizes there's no cable and there's no beer, he stays very calm. And he's like, Homer, I'm very impressed. And then he's just like, I'll kill all of you. And then he walks away and he's just like, I'll find something to like, you know, focus my time on. Maybe I'll check out that axe collection. And then Lisa asks, is Dad going to kill us? And Marge says, we'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah, there's a lot of really great, they fit in so many great jokes that, you know, kept the story going and made everything work out. One of my favorite jokes from The Shining is when Marge calls the police for help over the hotel radio. Yeah, and she goes, hello, police, this is Marge Simpson. My husband is on a murderous rampage. Over. And it's Chief Wiggum, and he goes, oh, well, thank God that's over. I was worried there for a second.
Those are the kinds of jokes where you wonder, how has no one done this? Like, this seems like the oldest joke in the book, and yet this is the first time anyone's doing it.
Yeah, they just sort of embrace that.
It's so amazing. I think they talked about that concept of, like, this, how could this possibly just be being made for the first time on Jibber Jab? And the joke that they talked about was someone saying this, like, let's fight, and someone saying them's fighting words. Like, they, it's this like very smart kind of
but the signs of it is that it's so obvious.
Exactly.
That you know, why would anyone do something that's so on the nose? But I think they do a very good job of like playing through the very smart deep reference jokes, like the Brazil joke, and then something that is so like lower shelf, easily to reach by a baby kind of jokes. I love the juxtaposition of those two different joke styles.
This is a small tangent from what you were saying, but like just on the topic of jokes and from The Shitting that we liked. There's a detail where Willie calls Bart a little fat boy. I think it's the first time they reference Bart as being overweight. I could be wrong, but it's like you look at him like, oh, I guess he is like a little fat. Like you kind of think like, oh, that's just how they draw the kids. But then like, oh, I guess Bart's like a fat kid, which just kind of changes your perception of him a little bit.
It does.
Yeah, he's got a little tub.
Yeah.
That's really true, because obviously you wouldn't really be able to know what is just the artist's style. And I think it's funnier if that is just the style that he draws everybody, but then pointing it out does totally flip it on its head, and suddenly he's the fat kid.
Yeah.
Because Lisa's shaped similarly, but doesn't have quite that gut.
No.
But it is kind of funny to think of someone who's like a cool kid as being a little like tubbier. I like it. I think it works.
Were either of you frightened when in the second segment, the Time and Punishment segment, when Homer travels to one timeline and Maggie chops down Willie with an axe and takes out her pacifier and speaks in a very low, foreboding tone?
This is indeed a disturbing universe.
Was that really alarming to you guys? I feel like I was affected by that.
I totally get that. That for me, I think I was able to see as just silly because maybe I don't have... I unfortunately have a very hard time being afraid of things that I can't visualize happening to me. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe because I've never been around babies, I have never been afraid of babies. Like in any horror movies, they've just never scared me. But I got really, really scared, and I don't know why I find this relatable, but when they get the part of their brain taken out, and just like Marge's face when she's holding up
Mo. Because that's a real thing.
It's a real thing, and just seeing Marge kind of holding it up, and with the, like, the way that they draw her is so tired. And,
I know.
That's what freaks me out.
There's a great, like, Mo part there, too. Like, and I think they do a good job in this one of, like fitting in the Simpsons supporting cast, you know, like Mo's the lobotomy patient in this one, the previous one we mentioned, Wiggum, and Burns and Smithers own the lodge that their caretaker's at.
Yeah.
But like the Mo coming in and just is like very like low key delivery, like he's missing part of his brain.
He's almost a piece.
It's not so bad, Homer. I know. Going through your nose, it's just
so... you get to keep the part of the brain that they take out. Yeah.
Hello.
Yeah. Yeah. No, he is actually almost at peace in a way that you're like, oh, that doesn't seem as bad. But then when we see the rest of the family, of course, it's terrifying.
Would you say that the Maggie part was the part that scared you the most? Or is throughout the entire episode, what would you say is probably the most frightening, either as a kid or watching it for
the first time as an adult? I would probably say the end when the gas comes in and turns them inside out and they do a chorus line.
It is really like, it's really graphic and kind of horrifying, like seeing their skin invert.
And the blood splatters.
It looks cool, but yeah, and then there's blood splatters, and then like the point where like during the credits, like they're singing a chorus line, and then Santa's little helper comes in and starts like gnawing on Bart.
Yeah,
it's like,
pretty
it's
gross.
Really gross.
Yeah. I was never into like Garbage Pail Kids kind of stuff when
blood
I was younger.
Kind of gross
blood and
stuff.
Guts, yeah, yeah. It's not really my thing. I mean, I can tolerate it, but yeah, it usually makes me just kind of go, change the channel.
Yeah.
Nick, what about you? Was there, I mean, you were already 14 at this point, so I'm not sure if you
yeah,
were
I
just
think as a
mostly
teen boy,
into it or.
I don't think as a teen boy there was anything that really spooked me, or if it was, maybe I shouldn't admit it. I don't remember being, you know, this was like a time in my life when me and my friends were watching VHS tapes of like, you know, horror films that were, you know, we were finding. It used to be remarkably hard to get your hands on an R-rated movie in the days of physical media. So, like, you know, but we were watching, like, you know, the Friday the 13th movies, Nightmare on Elm Street. So we were watching graphic horror. So it wasn't like nothing's too startling there. But it's definitely, like, feels like a, you know, again, just, like, for being a network cartoon, it's, like, super, super gory. Or at least it was in 1994. Yeah, I like the... you know, this one has like the sort of cannibalism thing, and this resonated with me partly because, like, when I was a lot younger, they were talking about Nightmare Cafeteria. When I was a lot younger, there was I watched a Twilight Zone that it was like at my grandparents' house, and I was too young to have seen it. It's the To Serve Man episode. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. And
which they reference directly into it's a cookbook.
Yeah, they reference. Yeah, they so reference.
In that episode of the Twilight Zone, they bring all these people on. Board a ship, and you think that they're like trying to take care of you, but then you learn that they're actually going to eat you. So there's a book called To Serve Man, like, oh, let us serve you, and it's aliens. I should have mentioned that these are aliens too. and then you realize, oh no, they're trying to cook you. By the way, that episode came out on March 2nd. That's my birthday, so I really like that episode a lot.
Wow.
Also, The Twilight Zone is definitely my favorite show after The Simpsons, and so it's one of the reasons I love how they always, always, always bring them together for the Treehouse of Horror.
Well, they've got like the Joy of Cooking Milhouse book that Edna's got.
And Milhouse's reaction.
And this one, yeah. Any one of us could be next. But yeah, also in an earlier Treehouse of Horror, because I when I first saw that Twilight Zone episode, I was like way too young to have seen it. And I was just like, I had nightmares and I couldn't sleep. And I was terrified. It was just like the idea of being eaten by an alien was just like the worst. I was like more afraid of that than anything. And you know, and I think in Treehouse of Horror 1... They have the run where they get abducted by aliens, and they have the they do the whole To Serve Man run, right?
They
where
do.
It's like, To Serve Man, and then it's like
she dusts it off, and then
yeah, I can't remember all the things it said. Oh, how to serve humans, and then it's how to serve.
How to serve like head of lettuce. Keep adding it, so it seems like it's not actually that. We'll look it up, but they're always doing little nods to that that I love. Mm-hmm.
If you're listening to this podcast, there's a good chance you know what we're talking about. It's that part in the Treehouse of Horror one where the words keep moving, meaning different things.
Basically. Yeah, right.
I love that. And I guess the twist that you kind of get in the twist ending in the second segment is kind of a Twilight Zone-y thing too, with the lizard tongues that we mentioned earlier.
Right.
I remember being very disturbed by the voices that Lisa uses when Homer's like doll sized, like when they're using him as a dollhouse, and Lisa says, "Let's squish him." Like his voice is just so low and creepy, and it's always seemed like not quite like just a bad take. It always seemed like, is that how you meant to sound?
That part also kind of confuses me because I guess I shouldn't find logic in that weird parallel universe, but hey, that aunt looks like dad. Okay, but then you're. So is this like a dollhouse that you're in the larger universe?
Doesn't.
I would guess a giant Homer also exists in that alternate timeline.
Yeah, that's what I'm guessing.
It's a little confusing.
And then I guess in that universe, if you see an aunt that looks like your father, that's okay. I don't know. I'm reading too much into it.
No, I think it's just right.
Yeah.
Okay. What do you guys think of, because like one of my favorite minor characters, voiced by Rusty Taylor, is Uter. Mm-hmm. And we talked about him, and he comes up in the third segment as the Uter Broughton. But like, what do you guys think of Uter in general? Are we Uter fans here?
I love Uter. I think that he's delightful, and it's really hard to separate one chubby nerd from another chubby nerd when they're all just kind of nondescript fourth graders, but they do such a good job of giving him such a distinct personality because he's almost Martin because like he's
that's
kind
what
of
I was gonna say
yeah so he's kind of
he's
like
German
the good
Martin
he's German yeah. Martin but he's also just a little bit more I don't think kids make fun of him quite in the same way because he's not the brainiac that Martin is. Like he's just a delightful
right
top
and they,
of lard.
They kind of can't fault him for being foreign.
Yeah, I think he's delightful, and I guess I can't really remember what the other kids think of him.
Yeah,
but he seems really pleasant, and he's very funny.
Yeah,
it's the same voice actor as Martin Prince, I believe.
Oh wow!
Yeah,
that makes sense.
There's I think the my favorite Uter Bobbitt is from the Lisa on Ice, where they're in the where Homer goes into the locker room and Lisa's joining the hockey team and he's like, all right, I don't want anyone giving her a hard time just because she's different. And then he notices Uter. He's like, that kid's got bosoms. And then he starts chasing him with a towel
and whipping
him.
It.
Yeah, it's like, oh, I'm filled with chocolate.
Yeah.
That was a line that my father and I laughed about for hours. I don't know why that struck such a chord with us.
but I think he's really well used here. Of just like cuts in line and... Mm-hmm. Another spicy Jimbo? Is that what it is? Or sloppy Jimbo? That's what it's called,
Jimbo.
Sloppy Jimbo, yeah.
Yeah.
Man.
You probably watched this as it was originally airing.
Yeah.
How old were you when you started watching The Simpsons in general?
The Simpsons, what's the first episode called? Simpsons Roasting on an Open Fire?
Yeah.
That one aired, I think, when I was, I would have been 8 or 9. I think that maybe aired in 1988, 1989. So I started watching it then, and I watched it straight through seasons 1 and 2. And then for whatever reason, I think the grade I was in decided on season 3 that Simpsons wasn't cool. So I'm not gonna watch it either. And then in, the next season, I think is when I was in middle school. And maybe I'm doing the math wrong, or in 7th grade or something. And then I had a circle of friends who were talking about how cool The Simpsons was, or like how funny The Simpsons was. So I started watching it again. So wow. I think probably from mid-season 4 through I think season 13, I think I watched pretty much every episode like as it aired.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely in this span, I saw this one as it premiered.
Yeah. I feel like I didn't talk about The Simpsons. I feel like I enjoyed it very... like in an isolated way.
Me too.
Feels weird.
Mm-hmm.
I feel the same thing for me, and I think you as well. It was a family experience. Like, I was watching it with my dad and my sisters. And, and I think I think talking about TV is something that has, at least as kids, has gotten more and more popular as, as it's gotten, you know, there are more ways to do it. But at least with my friends, it wasn't until middle school where you kind of had a choice of what you watched that there was even any reason. Because, like, if you're a kid, you don't really choose what you watch. Your parents choose what you watch. So, like, it'd be like talking about what time you go to bed. Like, it's doesn't really make sense.
Yeah, I feel like the only
What did you have for dinner? I don't know. What my mom made.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I feel like the only time that I referenced TV with my friends when I was in middle school was, like, Sherry O'Terry characters in SNL or something. Which shows my age.
Yeah.
Well, I definitely had a... At some point in junior high or high school, I think it was high school, it got back to me that there was some shit talking about my group of friends about how we made too many Simpsons references. Because I think that that's like kind of the thing of like a kid is like your substitute for making your own joke is just quoting someone else's joke. And yeah, you know, it's like the kid who is just doing Austin Powers all the time. And yeah, we would just do a lot of Simpsons references to make ourselves laugh.
But that's how I feel like you learn how to tell or write jokes.
Absolutely.
I guess so, yeah.
I feel like everyone, I mean, I know this is true about at least me and Julia, but I feel like everyone that we know that is very funny at one point in their life was repeating like Saturday Night Live sketches like to a T, performing it for their friends or doing something like.
And that's completely by design. Lorne Michaels is completely aware that he is creating every 13-year-old boy's favorite TV show at all times. Mm-hmm. Like, that's his audience that he's directly aiming toward, and everyone else is just a cherry on top.
How heartbreaking that there was ever a point that you felt, like, ostracized at all for watching The Simpsons and loving The Simpsons as much as you did.
Well, you know, I mean, like, I think kids are fickle, right? And I think that that's the kind of thing of, like, you could just... You whatever your favorite band or sports team is, just you can succumb to peer pressure so easily, I think, when you're in that, you know, preteen, tween sort of age group. So I think there's definitely things like there were a few. I remember there's some season 3 episodes, maybe some end of season 2 episodes where like I didn't watch them for a long time, like until they came out on DVD. Like I think I hadn't seen Blood Feud until like it came out on DVD. So yeah, there was a gap in my knowledge a little bit. But it's also like too, it's like I don't know what where you guys are from or if this syncs up with your ages, but like these Simpsons episodes would rerun in syndication all the time. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so like I'm from Southern California, and our local Fox affiliate would run it, I think, at, you know, like 6:30 and 7 every night, every weeknight. And so, you know, I was just watching 2 episodes of The Simpsons like every day after school, basically.
Same here. We're the same. We're both from here as well.
Okay. Yeah.
Yay!
There you go.
California. Yeah. We never get to talk about our hometown pride.
Oh boy!
Except for right now. Sorry, guys. I'm not sorry.
This is completely selfish, and I shouldn't derail. But I did read a review once on my Twin Peaks podcast that it was the only bad review that we got, and it was they're too proud that they're from California.
Oh no.
I didn't really know what that meant.
Well, they're kind of right.
Yeah. Well, I'm super happy to be from California and like The Simpsons and the
Right, song. Right, right. But yeah, we are.
Anyway, that was a very rude derailment.
I feel a little defensive as a lifelong Californian. I feel like when people like shit talk California, I get like a little like, all right, take it easy. Yeah. You know, like when, you know, we produce 25% of the nation's food supply. So just, you know, relax, you know.
Yeah.
We're 1/6 of the nation's population.
And
you know?
Avocados.
Yeah. Right.
Like, yeah.
When people come to LA, especially like comedians, and you know, they're coming from like Seattle or Chicago or New York or whatever, they immediately go to hating LA. Mm-hmm. And I will say, I get it.
Totally.
Like, I completely get it. If I were to move here trying to get a job, that's putting a lot of pressure on a town to give you a lot of happiness.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, that's kind of on you too. But I mean, I get that there are really douchey parts of Los Angeles, but
there are
douchey
parts of everywhere.
That's my point.
Of like, Springfield.
Right. Way to bring it back. But if you dig deep enough, I think you just find your own place and you make it work and try to accept happiness in your life.
There are some like LA centric jokes on The Simpsons. One that comes to mind, this was just a thing, like, because I'm my hometown was Lakewood, California, which is right next to Long Beach,
which is where I'm from.
And There was a joke, I think, in the Leftorium episode where Ned opens the left-handed store, and then Homer wishes for him to fail, and then he does. But there's a joke in that where someone comes in and is like, I heard you validate parking without a purchase, and Ned's like, yes, we do. Right is rain or left is rain, and you validate and just stamp the ticket. But I didn't know the concept of parking validation until I got to L.A.
Oh,
because
really?
Yeah, we were like this. You go to the mall, and there was just in the suburbs, there's just endless free parking.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely.
Wow. I didn't think that you would go there for LA-centric references, because I find
Ion Springfield.
Ion
Springfield. Is a good one, yeah.
They do a lot of LA-centric references. You know, I forget what episode, but they did a thing in the Orpheum Theater or Randy's Donuts. It's a big thing.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's interesting
Bowl
to see.
Yeah.
Right. Hollywood Bowl. Yeah. It's interesting to see how they bring LA into the show just because they're forced to be there.
Well, it's so funny that for so long there was just what seemed like the never answered mystery of where is Springfield.
Right.
And it's funny because now we know, but for so long they really were trying to make it a mystery. Mm-hmm. And part of the trailer of the Simpsons movie was them going to reveal where it was and then cutting off before they actually said where it was.
Right.
And it's at this time, I think as a kid, maybe as a stupid kid, I was just it's probably here. You're watching it. So you're just
Are you disappointed that they did that though, instead of sticking to the bits?
I kind of like sticking to bits, but it doesn't hurt my experience.
No, it doesn't hurt my experience. Not as much as finding out that they switched the timeline and that Marge and Homer met in the 90s.
So I will ask, Nick, you actually you're one of the people that I've known to actually speak kind of highly of at least some of the episodes in the more recent years. Can you talk about that?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think you have to think of it as it's not the show you remember if you haven't been watching it for a long time. I think it's a cartoon now. It's just, and I think if you one thing in its contemporary defense is that it looks fantastic in HD. It looks so great. And they've got amazing animators working on it. And they take, they change up the style visually and sometimes and in a really dynamic way. The couch gags are awesome, especially the extended ones. So there's just a lot to look at from an animation aesthetic standpoint that's really fun. And then also, funny writers work on the show, so there are funny jokes in it. I watched an episode from this season, and story-wise, it was maybe a little bit of a... didn't quite, it was just a little all over the place as these more contemporary Simpsons sometimes can be. But it was basically, Homer and Bart go on Nick Offerman was a guest voice, and Homer and Bart go on a ship adventure to try to rekindle their father-son relationship. And meanwhile, the subplot, B story is, Marge is learning how to play fantasy football, which maybe makes you cringe a little bit if you remember, because it's too contemporary. But they're I watched this episode and four times I laughed out loud. It's just these are just funny jokes. And I think if you can appreciate it on that level, not to ramble too long, I already have. I think of it the Hobbit movies versus the Lord of the Rings, where it's they're not as good. You just have to kind of see these really aren't as good, but they're kind of still fun, if you want to watch elves, fuck up giant spiders with bows and arrows, it's great. That it delivers on that. So, I mean, I think it's the same sort of way.
Let me be a jerk. Would you say that it is maybe accurate to use the analogy of the Star Wars, the original versus, because especially since there's so much time, just because people people decided to not like New Simpsons the same way that people decided to hate new Star Wars.
Yeah,
the prequels. And I feel if I watched them again, I would probably find that there were some good things in it, but I just would have to actively decide to not be a jerk about it.
Yeah, it kind of actually makes me think about, and this is similar but also very different. So what a great example, Julia. similarly, long-running show Saturday Night Live, I feel a lot of people
totally
think it's very fashionable to shit on whatever current season. season of Saturday Night Live there is, you know, we, or I mentioned earlier that Lorne Michaels is making, you know, a 13-year-old boy's favorite TV show. I feel like we all have our seasons that were our favorite when we were younger. And, you know, you can definitely see if you continue to watch it today that there are sketches that blow your mind. But it's a very high bar to measure up to. And I think you have to judge it to different standards.
Yeah, exactly. And I do feel like, I've never, like, I think I definitely am someone that has been a little loud about particularly loving early episodes, but I've, as I've said on the podcast, I just haven't watched new ones.
Same here,
and I will.
Yeah.
I really want to. I'm a little scared.
I'm putting it off just because it is so precious to me, the seasons that I do love, and...
But I know it won't ruin that. It won't get rid of the old stuff.
I want to believe that.
That's no,
the thing.
It's
like, again, like what we've said, I don't believe that the current seasons are bad in any way. And if I was hired tomorrow to write on The Simpsons, A, I would shit my pants. And B, I would be like, oh, let's do the best job we can knowing what we know. And, you know, of course, also, like, just a show that's run for as long as it has, it's hard to mine for new stories that haven't been touched upon.
Yeah, because The Simpsons did it.
Yeah, right, exactly.
There
yeah.
really is, like, on that note, there's another episode in this current season where, you remember the old pretzel franchise episode where Marge gets a pretzel franchise? It's that same story, except she gets a sandwich franchise.
it's like
they just did it again. It's like, all right.
Yeah.
I've also seen them do, they've done some callbacks that are very cute. You know, they've had Everything's Coming Up, Milhouse, where Lisa and Milhouse finally kiss. Mm-hmm. And then he, I don't know how, but he like falls off a cliff, but then he comes up on a giant eagle and then his hands go up and then he says, Everything's Coming Up, Milhouse.
Oh, that's
so they've kind of retooled.
Oh, that explains the tattoo I saw of that. I thought that was just some artist's rendition of it or whatever.
So, Nick, if you were having to write a lesson on the chalkboard, I keep doing that, chalk Bart. It's like Beyonce. But
yeah.
If you had to write a lesson as Bart for this episode, what would it be based on something
man.
You've learned?
Like a transgression from my life that I regret?
Whatever you interpret
something
that to be.
Yeah, you could do it however. We won't.
It could be if this podcast episode was an episode of The Simpsons.
Okay.
Or just something you learned from Treehouse of Horror 5.
Oh, man. I'm gonna get really deeply in my head about this and then say something I'm going to disagree with later.
Well, it's permanent.
You can spend 10 minutes. Yeah.
No, yeah, 10 minutes of dead air.
But, we're definitely not trimming. We are actually going to keep it.
Yeah, we
with
are
no music.
Proudly an unedited podcast.
Yeah, I think, you know, oh boy. I want to say, like, for me, it goes back to there's a thing that Marge says where in the third segment, Nightmare Cafeteria, where Lisa and Bart run to Marge and ask for her to rescue them. And she's like, you kids are going to have to fight your own battles one of these days. So I'd say, I will learn to fight my own battles. How about
that's
that?
That's great. That's
I love
probably
that.
The most insightful one we've had.
And also concise. That was very good.
Yeah.
And I love Marge's continuation of that. You march up to them and say, don't eat me.
Yeah.
That is, God, the lines that come out of her mouth are such mom things to say. Like, they are just so perfectly mom. I love that. Yeah, I feel like my mom said that to me when I said, the kids are at school are bullying me. She's like, you go up to them and you say, stop bullying me, and they'll stop. They'll respect you.
It wasn't until later in life that I appreciated Marge. And I imagine you have a different
right.
opinion, but like as a boy, I was like she was like my mom, and she was like kind of like, I feel like how some kind of douchebags are like mad at Skyler White because like she's putting a stop to the fun,
right,
you know?
Yeah.
And I kind of like had that thought towards Marge. It's like, oh, Marge isn't funny. I don't like Marge. No, I don't like the Marge episodes. And then, you know, later on, you're like, oh, wait, she has a lot of really funny lines. And like as a voice of reason, they find a way to use her that it gives her really, really funny jokes. And like some of her episodes are really good, too.
Mm-hmm.
I love Marge on the Lamb. That
yeah.
one's so
oh,
good.
Yeah, oh, that's so good. So off of that, which character from the core Simpsons cast do you most identify with?
Oh, man.
Or kind of the...
Or fringe characters, whatever.
Any character from the Simpsons?
Yeah.
I love Smithers.
Yeah.
And I think part, like, I love Smithers because he's one of the few characters in Springfield who I feel like is a functional person. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like so many people are like, I don't know how, you know, Chief Wiggum is completely incompetent. You know, Bo is suicidal. Barty's alcoholic. Smithers is a guy who feels like he's competent. He can do his job.
Right.
And I like appreciate that about him.
And you can imagine him going home and living his life and then coming to
work.
And
he certainly does. And we see that in glimpses. But yeah, he always reminds Mr. Burns that Homer is from Sector 7G. It's great. I mean, he's the only one that does his job well, too. I'm trying to think of anyone else. I guess Apu might, but then Apu also...
he left the part. He left to go to that party and left a man in a freezer. That's right.
I know. And I was going to talk about like the questionable morals with the hot dogs and picking it up off the ground. And yeah.
He's gotten shot a lot. He's actually not very good.
Yeah.
Well, thanks. And thank you for being on this episode. And where can people find your work and reach out to you online?
You can follow me on Twitter at Nick Weiger, and I'm not sure when this episode is going to be released, but watch Comedy Bang Bang on IFC Friday nights, and I wrote for the show, and it's a lot of fun.
Thanks so much.
Thanks.
So our Krusty Q this week was: has The Simpsons ever given you nightmares? And we got some pretty interesting answers. A lot of the answers had pictures accompanying them, which is terrifying. Why would you do that? For example, Albert Caro Jr. on our Facebook page wrote, "Homer's face melting from brother from the same planet still makes me feel uneasy. Now, how about a hug?"
Let me see that image.
Oh.
Oh,
it's
no.
It's pretty bad.
That is terrifying.
Any face melty stuff. And also Ryan Horn wrote, two people, Ryan Horn and Chris Siloto, whatever, I'm sorry. No, but can't sleep, clown will eat me. I feel like that
came up a
common
lot.
One. Yeah.
Nico Martinez said the same thing.
Yeah. Oh.
And actually, so did Patrick at Ruriano 1029. Ruriani. That's a very scary
one.
I'm
gonna butcher a lot of screen names. I feel like that's a given.
You
pick a screen name that's hard to pronounce.
Katie O'Neill at Say Katie said the gremlin on the side of the bus in Treehouse.
Yes, absolutely, which is another great reference to a Twilight Zone episode.
I want to say the gremlin in The Simpsons to me is so much scarier than the gremlin in the actual Twilight Zone.
It is.
I recently watched it, the Twilight Zone, and honestly was laughing at the monster. And I hate to be that person. I really hate to make fun of anything for not being scary when it's supposed to be scary.
Right.
It feels hurtful and mean.
Right. Because they worked hard. And
yeah.
You
know what? At the time, obviously, that was a very scary episode. But you look at it now, and it's just a man in a suit with a really funny face. And it's,
yeah,
it's just...
I know.
But also, I've always been more scared of Tiny. Like, Tiny can move fast.
Okay, that's what I was going to say. So I didn't mention this in the episode, but the one time that I got... like sincerely freaked out by The Simpsons was in a Treehouse of Horror where it was the doll, the Krusty doll.
Oh man, which is
comes
also
to life and is murderous.
Talkie Tina, which is a Twilight Zone episode.
Right, but then also that was around the time that Chucky was a thing. And I was actually sincerely frightened of Chucky.
Totally.
Yeah, I just, tiny stuff, unassuming tiny stuff.
Yeah.
Cool.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Bad.
Well, I mean, you never know where it's going to be next.
Exactly.
Big, you could probably see a shadow.
But also, like, it's supposed to be friendly and accessible and warm and welcoming, and it just turns on you. So moving back to the fan answers, David Spive on our Facebook page wrote, "I was really scared of when Flybart tried to kill Lisa in that Halloween episode."
Oh, and it's so icky and gross with all the juice
so gross.
I really love that episode. These Treehouse of Horrors are really creepy.
Yeah, and then also, God, this person's Facebook screen name is a marathon. Angus Podgorny's Caper Toss.
Get out of here.
Get out of here. That's not a person. You're a business. They appropriately wrote, because we covered this in our episode today, "Nightmare Cafeteria haunts me to this day. Seriously, what a terrifying episode." I agree, and so does Nick Weiger.
Sean Rice said, Treehouse of Horror 6, especially the Groundskeeper Willy Freddy Krueger bit. That scared me too. I think there's some image of, or imagery of him being burned when he's actually dying. That particularly scared me. But I obviously, not obviously, there are some children that saw scary movies before they maybe should. When I saw this, this was the scariest thing I'd ever seen.
Right.
I also wanted to just quickly say that the episode we watched today was my first introduction to The Shining, and that when I finally was old enough to, like, go through the Stanley Kubrick movies,
right,
I didn't realize that when I was watching One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, that was not The Shining. I just saw Jack Nicholson, and so for the entire movie, I kept waiting for Jack
Terrifying
Nicholson
in a different
to,
way.
Like, go through the door and say, here's Johnny.
Right, right. I will say that, you know, I hadn't seen The Shining until, like, last year.
Yeah.
And, but it's one of those movies that, you know, I saw it referenced in The Simpsons, but then knew of it, and you kind of, like, digested by osmosis.
Sure.
By a certain point.
Can I say something?
Mm-hmm.
It's not as funny as The Simpsons.
It's not as... Shining, not as funny. Yeah. Room 237, very funny.
Very funny.
I saw that in a packed movie theater in San Francisco, and the crowd was howling, and the director was there, and he said, I've never seen people... I've seen so many audiences watch this movie... I've never seen a crowd laugh as hard as you guys. So I don't know what that says about San Francisco's art-loving community.
Yeah.
But, you know, there it is.
And then Awkward GF Screen Caps, the Homer Cubed Treehouse of Horror segment freaked me out a lot.
Awkward GF Screen Caps. Explain yourself. What is that? I don't want it
you know
to be
what it
revenge
is?
Porn.
You what know is what it is? Gravity Falls.
Oh,
shout out to Gravity Falls. And then one more from our Twitter, Bobby Cash, Jebediah Springfield's corpse, and when Homer's face melted after picking
right.
apart.
I want to go back to Awkward GF Screen Caps.
Let's go there.
What an easy blog to make. How lazy that you just do screen caps. I'm not disparaging blogs. I know we're all playing the Tumblr game trying to get a book deal.
I will say my favorite thing just to do for fun is to look at screen caps of The Simpsons.
Same here.
My camera roll is probably... 30% cat pictures, 20% selfies,
yeah.
and 50% Simpsons screen caps for various
I want to do a shout out to
reasons.
You as well. You posted this, I think, on the Facebook page or maybe your own Twitter, and then we reposted it on our Simpsons Twitter, whatever. It's all the same person. But you did a post where you're like, sometimes I like to type Simpsons sad. And you posted this amazing photo of like a beefed up like Guido Bart. It was really, really great. But
yeah.
not like a bootleg Bart style Guido Bart. It was like sincerely
authentically art.
Good art. Yeah, it was really good.
Make sure to follow us on Twitter, on Facebook, and all that, because we love to post our favorite Simpsons moments, and we really like getting them from you.
Oh man, absolutely. And email us too. Like I would love to hear from you guys, and I don't know, I just like talking to people on The Simpsons.
Just tell us
what
you think.
Ooh, yeah.
And make sure to leave us reviews, because that helps us get more people listening.
Right.
And we like to read them.
Yeah, and I don't know, maybe the more reviews we have, the bigger the guests will get, like, I don't know, like,
we're gonna have Bart Simpson on next.
We're gonna have Bart Simpson, and it'll be pretty cool.
It's gonna be pretty cool. We will see you next week, you guys.
All right, bye.
Bye.